That's good. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody, and welcome back to our series on John F. Kennedy. This is part three, in which we're going to talk about JFK's policies here in the United States. And we're actually going to go back and talk about a couple more foreign policies, but it also has to do more with the military complex in the United States. So it's still kind of more domestic, but it has to do with international issues. So we're, again, going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about civil rights, but then we're going to talk about a couple issues in which the CIA and the military establishment are back involved. So this should be a pretty fun episode. We're kind of getting more into the theories on going back and taking a look at the possibilities of if this was not just a single person, an assassination, a murder in Lee Harvey Oswald, then what could it have been, right? There's just so much that people have been speculating for over 60 years now, and it's just kind of, you know, I don't want to say fun, but it's very intriguing to dig further into this and kind of come to different conclusions, because I feel like the same theory arises over and over again. Like the CIA has something to do with it. And yes, they might not have pulled the trigger, but are they involved or are there other groups involved? I don't know. It's just, that's why I wanted to do this series, because I'm a big John F. Kennedy fan. And with all this hopefully new information coming out at some point, just trying to shed light on this situation and kind of just talk about it. But, you know, I haven't been drinking much. We talked about that. And you know what? I have to say now, I think I have students listening to this podcast. So if you are one of my students, no, this drinking part is not for you. Fast forward. Go. All the way through. But I am having a Two Brothers Demain DuPage. Just one. Just for the podcast tonight. Just chilling and having a good time. So I hope you're doing the same as you're listening to this. Hopefully on Friday. If not, hopefully you're listening on Saturday. And you're also just relaxing with a cocktail or a beer or whatever you drink. Students, soda, water, juice, Gatorade, whatever. But yeah, let's get to it. John F. Kennedy's domestic policies closely mirrored what we talked about last episode about his foreign policies. Kennedy based his policies on production rather than speculation. He wanted to create fair opportunities and fair access for all and stop the abuses by special interest groups and the wealthy 1% in the United States.
Tonight, looking back over the last year and a half, we can take some heart from these statistics and these gains which have been made. The gross national product, which is the story of all the things that we produce, that has gone up 10%, over $50 billion in additional goods and services. The second chart, industrial production, which is the output of our factories, has gone up 16% in that period of time. The unemployment rate, and the unemployment rate is still too high, has gone down 23% in the last year and a half, and about 1 million people who were unemployed now have jobs. The disposable personal income, which is the amount of income we have after taxes, has gone up $30 billion, 8%. Wages and salaries have gone up 10%, $27 billion. And corporate profit after taxes since January 1961 have gone up 26%, or a total of $10 billion. So this is the story of our economic recovery.
Kennedy proved his policies were working, with gross domestic product rising $100 billion, about 20% during his presidency, with personal income rising around 15%. He believed that Vietnam War spending was utterly irresponsible, and his focus was to promote growth and reduce economic suffering of the poor. One area of change Kennedy made in his economic policy was the implementation of taxes, trying to revitalize the economy. He signed into law an investment tax credit, which allowed companies to deduct the value of their investments that contributed to facility and equipment from their taxes. The goal was to make equipment cheaper for business owners.
We need enactment of the investment tax credit, which will stimulate business outlays for modern machinery, the kind of taxes which they've used successfully in Western Europe to stimulate their economy. As we produce more, businessmen buy new machines, this makes for new jobs. and combined with our improved depreciation allowances, should put us in a better competitive position.
Another was a general tax cut aimed to assist the poorest 33% of the population, as well as small businesses. He also implemented long-term interest rates to spur investments, make credit more readily available, and reduce interest rates on mortgages. Kennedy wanted to accelerate federal spending to redevelop impoverished areas to make them more attractive to businesses and also fix the highways and public interests in those areas of high employment.
Secondly, we need enactment of the bill to step up federal help to state and local public works, increasing this year the building of those projects in parts of our country which most urgently need them, where there are many of our fellow countrymen out of work and where there's a good deal still to be done. That bill has passed the Senate. I hope it passes the House.
As we know today, our defense industry makes billions, if not trillions, on government contracts from the Department of Defense, which has the highest percentage of the national budget. JFK set his goal to increase defense contracts to smaller businesses by 10%, which would take away from big business profit, something that would piss off powerful people. Another part of this goal was to increase small business contracts in the areas of research and development. Kennedy created funding through the federal government for community colleges, technical schools, and graduate schools. He believed the higher and more quality education would lead to more employment. As a high school teacher, I 100% agree.
And then we need a bill to assist our schools and universities, our bill particularly for higher education. There are going to be twice as many of your sons and daughters trying to get into college in 1970 as 1960, 7.5 to 8 million. Our schools and colleges can't take all of them unless they begin a tremendous building program. And I think the national government should play its fair part. Educated young man or woman is our most precious asset. It's the key to economic and social advance, and I think that this is the most important piece of legislation.
He also put focus on the environment and conservation, claiming low energy costs was vital and preserving natural resources would drive the economy. Overall, JFK was disgusted with the elites and wealthy holding down the common American to be poor. He wanted to open more opportunities for the common American. Increasing profits and earnings would promote good tax collection and create economic expansion without the need for war. Remember, war makes money. These policies were aimed to close the economic gap between the wealthy and the poor, not very popular for those who hold power. JFK's economic policy was definitely a war on the wealthy. There's no other institution that felt this way like those who worked on Wall Street. Wall Street's private interests were highly threatened by JFK trying to serve for the public good and put more money in the average American's pockets. You know, God forbid. Small businesses were getting more opportunity, while big businesses were not getting much benefit. Kennedy's plan was to tax foreign profits abroad, closing the loopholes, which encouraged industry to avoid paying their taxes. He believed this greedy strategy drained jobs and dollars from America. He also proposed laws that would no longer allow the wealthy to transfer funds to offshore bank accounts to avoid paying taxes on their estates. Many of these policy decisions burned the bridges between private power and governmental elected power. One extraordinary issue Kennedy had during his presidency was with the steel industry and the steel giant, U.S. Steel. Steel is one of those products that affects all other commodities. Remember, steel is that raw resource that makes a lot of different things. Tanks, submarines, buildings. U.S. Steel, as well as other prominent steel companies, wanted to increase prices but not raise wages for their workers. Kennedy wanted to avoid this completely. He stepped in to help moderate negotiations between U.S. Steel and the workers' union. After negotiations, U.S. Steel agreed to avoid raising prices. However, Kennedy found out that U.S. Steel raised prices anyway and double-crossed him. Many thought the president should have no say in a private company making decisions. However, from the president's point of view, he was asking for transparency and honesty from the company who had such an impact on the American economy. U.S. Steel doing this behind JFK's back made him look bad to the common workers. JFK responded by sending defense contracts to small companies and even foreign companies who did not increase their prices. Kennedy was making his point clear that the government, who makes these companies highly profitable through these contracts, could carry on without their cooperation. This is something to consider that put a large bullseye on Kennedy's back, refusing to buy from big business and Wall Street elites. Kennedy's harsh dealing with Wall Street and big business often led to him and his brother being attacked in the press. The Kennedy brothers were often compared to socialists. However, they proved to the common people that the rich just kept getting richer and the poor only getting poorer. The president of the Chamber of Commerce even declared Kennedy to be a, quote, dictator, end quote. Kennedy was very focused on the rights of the consumers, and he prominently stated four of these rights. 1, safety. 2, right to be informed. 3, the right to choose. And 4, the right to be heard. He also pushed for regulation over food and drugs to keep the American people healthy. JFK went after many powerful establishments, which made him many enemies. Some of these establishments being the chemical industry, pharmaceutical industry, his own military, and other big businessmen. Kennedy wanted a true free market system in which there was an opportunity for the common people to prosper. These policies were not acceptable to Wall Street.
My fellow Americans, this administration is pledged to safeguard our nation's economy. It is a vital matter to all of us. Upon it depends our individual well-being and the well-being of all the countries that so greatly depend upon us. I believe that it is necessary for those of us who occupy positions of responsibility in the national government, in the Congress, and in the states, and all of us to work together to build an economy which can sustain all of the great responsibilities which have been placed upon it.
There was one press attack specifically after the whole U.S. steel debacle that is just eerie to me. The publication Fortune had a headline titled, quote, Steel, the Ides of April, end quote. Now, this is an alliteration to Shakespeare's Ides of March, where he claimed Julius Caesar was warned of his assassination with this exact phrase. Caesar had upset much of Rome by putting in place social and governmental reforms, and most importantly, land reforms. These reforms angered the elites and are some of the main reasons for his brutal stabbing. The Roman Empire emerged shortly after Caesar's death, and the Roman constitutional government was no more. Now, this is interesting because even in today's very toxic political realm, I would expect to see this kind of warning in a publication in 2025, but this is the 1960s when there wasn't much of this hate and threat of the U.S. president. So this is just very eerie and dark to me that a publication would come and kind of hint at a historical assassination, one that many, many people know and learn in school, right, with Julius Caesar, and talk about the Ides of March.
This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds. It was founded on the principle that all men are created equal, and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened.
One of JFK's main areas of focus was that of civil rights in the United States. At the time of Martin Luther King Jr.'s arrest, Kennedy called King's wife Coretta directly to express his support for her and her husband. Political opponent Richard Nixon, campaigning for the 1964 election against Kennedy, had pretended like MLK didn't even exist. This made Kennedy very popular with black Americans, especially in the South, and overall made him a true friend to people of color in the White House. Kennedy worked tirelessly on a civil rights bill to be signed into law. The one we know today was the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which his brother Robert pushed for after JFK's assassination, ultimately finishing his brother's work. However, while JFK was alive, he signed a massive executive order which, quote, banned discrimination based on race, religion, or national origin in the sale or rental of housing financed by federal aid, end quote. We know this today as low income or Section 8 housing.
It ought to be possible, therefore, for American students of any color to attend any public institution they select without having to be backed up by troops. It ought to be possible for American consumers of any color to receive equal service in places of public accommodation, such as hotels and restaurants and theaters and retail stores, without being forced to resort to demonstrations in the street. And it ought to be possible for American citizens of any color to register and to vote in a free election without interference or fear of reprisal. It ought to be possible, in short, for every American to enjoy the privileges of being American without regard to his race or his color. In short, every American ought to have the right to be treated as he would wish to be treated, as one would wish his children to be treated.
Kennedy also had his brother, the Attorney General, work closely with minority organizations to combat attempts of institutions trying to prevent minorities from voting. Robert Kennedy filed over 40 voting rights lawsuits, as well as helping Southern Black Americans to get registered. Most of Kennedy's civil rights actions had to be done through executive orders because Congress didn't think the country was ready to put these kind of laws on the books. One of Kennedy's biggest accomplishments was reopening the Virginia County schools after the Virginia legislature made public schools optional in response to a desegregation order sent down from the federal government. The officials in Prince Edward County responded by opening a private school for whites only with state funds and county tax credits, which left 1,700 black children without schooling. Kennedy looked at all of these issues as moral issues and did not care if he had to endure a political cost because of it. Kennedy wanted all Americans to have equal rights and the opportunity to prosper. This would ruffle many feathers amongst lawmakers at the state and federal level.
We are confronted primarily with a moral issue. It is as old as the scriptures and is as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities, whether we are going to treat our fellow Americans as we want to be treated. If an American, because his skin is dark, cannot eat lunch in a restaurant open to the public, if he cannot send his children to the best public school available, if he cannot vote for the public officials who represent him, if, in short, he cannot enjoy the full and free life which all of us want, then who among us would be content to have the color of his skin changed and stand in his place?
These economic and social issues were a great part of Kennedy's attention throughout his short presidency. But there were other political issues that would arise that the public became very concerned about. One was the growing conflict in Southeast Asia, including the countries of Vietnam and Laos, governmental agencies defying the president's authority and power, and of course, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the threat of nuclear weapons, which would start the conversations on the disarmament of these threatening devices. It's not a secret that in the 1960s and 70s, the United States held interest in many of the resources produced in Southeast Asia. The Vietnam War is usually the main event highlighted during this era. However, before Vietnam, President Kennedy had the tall task of settling conflict in Laos, Vietnam's next-door neighbor. The threat growing in Laos was previously being handled by President Eisenhower and his administration, but now being passed on to Kennedy in the transfer of power. Eisenhower had filled Kennedy in on the situation in Laos and suggested the use of force through military was going to be necessary to keep the communists out. Kennedy, however, didn't think that military force was necessary and started to look for his own solutions for the Laos threat. Kennedy's main idea in Laos was a neutralist solution in which multiple political groups would share government. This even includes the communists. If you haven't picked up on the reoccurring themes of Kennedy's actions, instead of immediately supporting the right-wing military leader General Fumi Nusavan, who was supported by the CIA and Pentagon, Kennedy goes to his ambassador to Laos, Winthrop Brown, to discuss the situation. Brown stated to Kennedy that Laos could only be reunited by supporting the neutralist leader Suvana Fuma, another situation in which Kennedy would go against the defense organizations in the U.S. government. His ambassador, Winthrop Brown, even stated that he was so honored that President Kennedy even asked his opinion because he knew already what the military state wanted to do. After the Bay of Pigs incident, Kennedy has little confidence in his military advisors, and he refuses to grant their request of sending troops to Laos. Now, just to revisit, the Bay of Pigs was the failed plan to support Cuban revolutionaries to overthrow their communist government, which got every revolutionary either killed or captured. In a surprising move, General Douglas MacArthur actually backs Kennedy's stance on the Laos situation. However, the military establishment, with support of the CIA, continued to try and sabotage the president's efforts and turn Laos into an American stronghold. Kennedy assigned Averell Harriman to negotiate with the Soviet Union. He came out successful in honoring Kennedy's wishes by not putting troops in Laos and also brokering a deal that formed a coalition government in Laos made up of left, right, and neutralist parties.
Rising to its responsibility, the United Nations help reduce the tensions, and help to hold back the darkness. Today, the clouds have lifted a little so that new rays of hope can break through. The pressures on West Berlin appear to be temporarily eased. Political unity in the Congo has been largely restored. a neutral coalition in Laos, while still in difficulty, is at least in being.
On the home front, many in the United States government, especially the military and CIA, determined that Kennedy lost Laos completely by making this deal with the Soviet Union, soft on communism. Just as he held his stance not to put troops in Laos, Kennedy also wanted to avoid putting troops in Vietnam. His advisors pleaded with him that the U.S. interests and world interests were at stake in Vietnam. With how intense the situation got, Kennedy appeased his advisors by sending a limited number of troops to Vietnam. However, by May of 1963, Kennedy was already making plans to pull troops out. At this point, the military was stalling by sending Kennedy false intelligence reports in fear of a total pullout. At this point, Kennedy was worried about his re-election campaign, in which he stated to one of his aides that if he lost Vietnam to communists, that he would never be re-elected by the American people. After Kennedy was assassinated and Lyndon B. Johnson took office, the war in Vietnam became a full-blown conflict. The Vietnam War is arguably one of the most useless wars in American history, which took thousands of lives. Roughly 10% of the troops sent to Vietnam would not return home, not to mention the psychological and health issues that would haunt those to this very day. Many believe that the Vietnam War would never have occurred if Kennedy would have lived and finished his presidency. While Laos and Vietnam show the disdain the military establishment and CIA had for Kennedy, another less heard of situation showed the same sentiment. In 1958, the CIA tried to overthrow the government of Indonesia under the Eisenhower administration. Kennedy was floored by this action when he took office. CIA Deputy Director for Plans, Richard Bissell, claimed that the dictator of Indonesia, named Sukarno, was comparable to Patrice Lumumba in the Congo, in which these men, remember from our previous episodes, needed to be taken out in order to keep communism away. When Kennedy took office, he asked Bissell to resign and looked over the previous 1958 coup attempt documents himself. He concluded that he understood why Indonesia had such an anti-American attitude, with the CIA being this deeply involved in trying to overthrow their sitting leader. Now here's where things get a little bit eerie again. The same UN Secretary General, Dag Hammarskjöld, who had a large role in the Congo incident we talked about in their previous episode, he was already working to gain nearby Papua New Guinea their independence from the Dutch and Indonesia. He was implementing his program called OPEX, O-P-E-X, not to be confused with OPEC, the giant oil corporation. OPEX was to help newly independent nations get on their feet without foreign interruption. Kennedy loved this plan because the UN would be dealing with the Dutch and Indonesians, which were allies of the United States. However, Hammarskjöld's plan would never get far enough because, remember, his plane had crashed in the Congo, and there is evidence that it was an assassination. Former President Harry Truman, who was advising Kennedy on the issue in Indonesia and other areas in the world, told a New York Times reporter, quote, Dag Hammarskjöld was on the point of getting something done when they killed him. Notice I said when they killed him. That's all I have to say on the matter. Draw your own conclusions, end quote. So who are they? The CIA? U.S. military establishment? Other U.S. intelligence groups? It sounds like Truman knew something. Now, here's where things make my brain just explode. Without Kennedy and Indonesian leader Sukarno's knowledge, Hammarskjöld was working to grant sovereignty in West New Guinea to an area that held a hidden gold mine, which was twice as large as the richest gold mine that's in South Africa. Now, this mine was originally discovered by three workers from the Netherlands New Guinea Petroleum Company. However, the majority of the shares of the mine were held by two U.S. Rockefeller oil companies. Now, this mine was known of, but it was a big secret. It hadn't been mined due to its hard-to-access location, but there was one person specifically who knew of the mine and was a lawyer for the Rockefellers, former CIA agent Alan Dulles. The same Alan Dulles Kennedy had forced to resign and was a very shady figure in the CIA. Hammarskjöld and Kennedy knew that their opposition to the secession of Katanga, which was the most wealthy region of the Congo, was risky. But they had no idea that their support for a sovereign West New Guinea would be detrimental to their lives. Could this be a situation that led to the alleged assassination of Hammarskjöld and his plane crash, and then eventually the assassination of John F. Kennedy? With Hammarskjöld killed, the UN was no longer an option for dealing with New Guinea. Kennedy took it upon himself to negotiate with Indonesia and the Dutch. Eventually, the West New Guinea territory would go to Indonesia, which Alan Dulles was more than happy to hear. With the Dutch out of the way, Dulles and the CIA could now install a puppet government in Indonesia to take advantage of the resources. With the amount of wealth and resources that could be developed, Indonesia would have been one of the top five richest countries in the world. After Kennedy's assassination, aid to the Indonesians was cut off. The only aid still flowing to Indonesia was for the military, for the most sinister of purposes. The goal was to oust their leader, Sukarno, as Indonesian president through a military coup by General Suharto, who was supported by the United States. When Sukarno had his biography written by a woman named Cindy Adams, he asked her a very straightforward and dark question. Quote, "Why did they kill Kennedy?" End quote. Now, Sukarno was eventually overthrown in 1965 after seizing American, Dutch, and British companies in the region. Evidence shows that the CIA was the main proponent behind the coup. Western corporate interests now controlled the resources in Indonesia, and Alan Dulles had secured access to the gold for all of his clients. So very interesting. We talked a little bit about in this episode here, economic policy, right? Again, ticking off the elites, the wealthy, looking out for the common American, tax breaks for the poor. Then we take a look at civil rights and how Kennedy was gaining popularity amongst colored Americans. And not just the black community, but, you know, the Hispanic community, the Asian community. There was a lot of support for Kennedy. And the elites didn't like this. And remember, this is a pretty racist time in U.S. history. The Civil Rights Act isn't signed until after Kennedy is assassinated, right? 1964 is when that is signed, and this whole new anti-discriminatory laws are put into place. So you have to think about these domestic policies. Did it put a target on his back for what he was doing? And then we take a look again at these kind of military intelligence community quarrels that are going on during Kennedy's presidency, and there are very powerful unelected people who are looking at the target on Kennedy's back for how he's really trying to oust their interests in these regions. And I just can't get away from Alan Dulles. Every time I look at something that has happened where there's resources with gold or some wealthy part of a country like in the Congo and that region of Katanga, Alan Dulles is there. And that name just won't go away. There's just something in me, especially because his name is on the Warren Report. Remember, that's the investigation to put the whole assassination of John F. Kennedy together. He is one of the main names on that report. And again, it's just a coincidence. Is Alan Dulles just in the wrong place at the wrong time to be looking like a bad guy all the time? Or does he have something to do with this? Now, like I said, we know Lee Harvey Oswald pulled the trigger. Well, one of the triggers. We'll talk about that down the road. There's a little foreshadowing for you. But there has to be a CIA component to Kennedy's assassination. And next time, we're going to talk about some bigger events in Kennedy's presidency that really have a historical impact on the United States and pushing even more towards his assassination and who is maybe to blame for either planning it or funding it or whatever's happening behind the scenes of the assassination. We're going to talk about Berlin and dealing with the Soviet Union directly. We're going to talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis, one of the scariest times in the world when the clock almost struck midnight and nuclear war almost occurred. Then we'll also have an episode in the future. And we're going to talk about how Kennedy dealt with a little country called Israel. Thank you all so much for listening to the History on the Rocks podcast. Please come back and join us next week for part 4 of our JFK series. It's only going to get better and better, I promise. Please go follow us on Instagram. I don't have Facebook anymore. Facebook was getting way too lame and boring for me, and I don't know. Facebook was just blah. So go follow History on the Rocks podcast on Instagram. Please like, share, tell your friends, okay? We're back. And I'm loving this series so far. Maybe it's because I'm a JFK nerd, okay? Like, my daughter's name is Kennedy. And, like, I'm going to tell people she's named because of him. But I mean, we just really love the name, but like, that's how much of a Kennedy nerd I am. So I'm really enjoying this series right now. I hope you are too. Like I said, it's just going to get a little bit more mysterious. We're going to talk about some theories here in the future. It's only going to get better. So again, please come back next week. I promise we're going to get to some really juicy details. And if you're a fan of crime, we're almost going to like jump into the true crime category with this historical series. So I hope you all have a great weekend. Go see some friends, some family. If you're of age, go get some drinks in. Relax. It's the weekend. We'll see y'all next week. Cheers.